Hello, and welcome back to another KPL episode with your hosts, Ryan Drinkard, and me, Jigisha Patel, both reference and technology librarians here at Kirkwood Public Library. This week, we have an interview with award-winning author Eileen Moskowitz-Palma, and she'll be talking to us about her latest book, Camp Click, Book One of the Popularity Pact. In addition, Anna, the first place winner of I Survived COVID-19 Short Story Contest, will be reading her story to us. So we have a great episode. Stay tuned.
So today on the program, we wanted to highlight one of our services, which is the Digital Archives. Specifically, one thing that you can find there, which is the I Survived Short Story Contest of 2020. In the spirit of solidarity, creativity, and scholarship, the librarians of the Kirkwood Public Library held a short story contest in the style of the best-selling I Survived series. Each book is about a kid who lived through a difficult time in history, and we wanted to hear the stories of how kids in our community adapted to the change in their lives during quarantine. They could write either a true story about themselves and their family, similar to Lauren Tarshish's books, or they could create a fictional character and a story based off of the research they did. And fantastic news, we are joined by the contest winner, Anna, who is going to read her short story. Enjoy.
I Survived COVID-19. Chapter 1, What's to Come? I don't want to move, I say to my parents. Son, people need me. But Dad, I don't want you to be working with all those sick people around. I won't catch the virus, trust me, my dad says, trying to calm me down. But there are pigeons, I say. Pigeons are my biggest fear. They always follow me wherever I go. They give me the chills. I'm sure you'll get over your fear of pigeons. They're actually pretty sweet, my mom tells me. But what about my friends? I ask, trying to convince them that we shouldn't move. I'm sure you'll make new friends, honey. My mom tries to explain. All right, fine. When are we leaving? In about 10 days, my dad says, excitedly. 10 days? I've got to get packing. Chapter 2, Finding Out. We can't tell him, I hear my mom say to my dad in a loud whisper. Honey, he's 11 years old. He needs to learn how to face reality, my dad says. My parents were in the kitchen thinking I was reading on my bed, but I could hear everything they were saying. Though I've been listening throughout the whole conversation, I still can't figure out what they're talking about. I walk into the kitchen saying, what are you guys talking about? Should we tell him? My dad whispers to my mom again. Fine, my mom says with a sigh. I was so curious to find out what they were talking about. Am I getting a baby brother or sister? Are we getting a puppy? Well, I know. We're going to Disney World. My dad's voice broke through my thoughts. Son, there's a virus called the coronavirus. It started in China and it's made its way to the United States. So that's what it is. I've heard people talk at school talk about it, but never really knew what it was. Carson, we want you to know what's going on, but we don't want you to feel overwhelmed or scared, my mom explains. I don't feel overwhelmed or scared. I'm just a little confused. Why is this such a big deal? Let's go watch the news. Maybe you will understand a little bit more, my dad says. Chapter 3, Spring Break. We watched the news for a little bit. I saw a lot of stories with people who have the coronavirus. I'm more aware now, but I'm still not that scared. Spring break started yesterday, and all I can think about is when my mom and dad told me we had to move. I started packing a little bit, but I'm still processing what's going on. Have you packed your t-shirts, my mom asked, walking into my room. Yes, I said with a sigh. What about your shoes, my mom asked, concerned. Yes, Mom, I have everything, I say, a little annoyed. We're not going anywhere during the spring break except for Lowe's to get more boxes. Half of the people at Lowe's were wearing masks. When we get to the box aisle, I ask my dad, Dad, how many people in Kansas have the coronavirus? Less than 100, son. What about New York? I wanted to know this because we were moving there soon. Well, about 5,000, he answers. 5,000? I say, surprised. Now I was getting a little worried by the amount of cases there were. Why would we even move to New York if 5,000 people have the coronavirus there? My dad is risking his life to save people. I've never realized how big this actually is. The rest of spring break was kind of boring. All my friends can't play with anybody because their parents don't want them getting sick. So I've just been getting ready for the move. Also, I've been reading a lot, which is really weird because I normally like to play video games at my friend's house. Chapter 4, Some Big News. Tomorrow is the big day. I just finished packing when my dad comes in to tell me something important. Carson, I have some big news. All schools and businesses are closing. Really, I say? I don't think that schools would just close because of this little virus. Son, you have to remember that this is not just a little virus. It's all over the world, and people are suffering from it. Then my dad's phone rang. He looked at it, shocked. What is it? I got an email that says all flights have been canceled. We're going to have to drive to New York. The next day, we're loading all of our stuff into our car. It'll take 2 days to get to New York, including meals and rest stops. I don't want to move to New York. There are just so many pigeons. Plus, how am I going to find friends if I can't even see people? What if my dad gets coronavirus? All these questions were swirling in my head, and I couldn't stop thinking about all the things that could go wrong. Tears started coming down my face. Tried not to cry, but I kept on crying. My mom asked, are you okay? I'm fine. It's just my allergies, I lied. I don't understand why everything has to change. I don't want to leave all my friends, especially when I can't go out and meet new friends. I'll have no friends. I can't even go to school now. We are leaving the only home I've ever known. I won't know my way around that big city. Besides, I can't even go out and to explore my new city. I wish my parents would just listen to me and understand how much I don't want to leave. Chapter 5, New Home. When we arrive at our apartment, I collapse onto the floor after a long and tiring drive. Okay, the furniture should be coming next week, my dad says. Next week? Where are we going to sleep, I say, wondering if things could get any worse. Don't worry, we have sleeping bags, he says, smiling. I give him a look. Come on, this is going to be fun, he tries to convince me. Define fun, please, I argued. What your dad is trying to say is that we are going to make this work, Mom steps in. All right, fine. I got an email from your new school, by the way. You're starting online classes next Thursday, my mom tells me. Okay, well, at least I don't have to be the new kid that everybody talks about, I mumble. Nice way to stay positive, my dad says proudly. Today I start online learning. I'm a little nervous. I was one of the smartest kids at my old school, but who knows how I'll do now. My dad is also starting work at the New York Presbyterian Hospital, which is just 2 blocks away from our apartment. We got all of our furniture yesterday, and I'm kind of getting used to living here. It helps to have furniture because it makes it feel more like home now. Carson, breakfast is ready, I hear my mom yell. Coming, I say, running down the hall to the kitchen. I see my dad sitting at the table in his new scrubs. It's weird to see a new hospital name printed on the pocket of his shirt. He has always worked at Kansas Heart Hospital, or at least as long as I've been around. Are you ready for school today? My mom asks. sipping her coffee. She looked tired but happy. "Yeah, I guess," I say, looking down at my Cheerios. "You're so smart, you have nothing to worry about. And besides, I'm here to help you," she says. She smiled. Mom had decided not to get a job right away since we had so many things to change. She wanted to stay home with me. Dad takes one last sip of his coffee and sets his University of Kansas mug in the sink. Mom had worked so hard unpacking the kitchen so that we could at least have one room that felt normal. "All right, kiddo. Gotta go. See you tonight." He leans over to give me a hug, and I think to myself, he's gonna be okay. I wasn't as worried anymore. "Bye, honey." He gives Mom a little kiss on the cheek. "You're gonna do great," Mom encourages him. That's what she always does, encourage people. She's the best cheerleader. Dad walks out the door with his briefcase in hand. "All right, buddy, time for school." Mom clears a spot for me to work at the table. I grab my computer and start looking at my work. I'm actually a little excited. It's nice to do something a little bit normal again. Chapter 6, New Normal. It's been a week since I started school, and I'm kind of getting used to the new normal. My class has a Zoom meeting every morning so my teacher can check in with us. Miss Peters is really nice. She had everybody make welcome signs to show me on a Zoom the first day. "You want to go on a walk?" my mom asked me. My mom and I have been going on a walk every day. We try to avoid times where there's a lot of people out. Governor Cuomo has required everybody to wear a mask. My mom made me a camouflage mask that is super cool. "How's the schoolwork coming along today?" my mom asked me as we start walking outside. "I finished everything," I say, looking down at my shoes. "Wow, already? It's only 10 o'clock in the morning," she says, surprised. "Yeah, I started really early," I told her under my mask. "You haven't really talked to me lately about how you feel with all this new stuff." "Yeah, well, I honestly don't know how to feel about all of this, but I have gotten used to being quarantined, and the pigeons aren't as bad as I thought." "That's great, honey." A few minutes went by silently. "I like walking with you, Mom." "Really?" "Yeah, I've learned that I like it way more than being stuck inside the house on my computer." "That's good, sweetie." "Man, I can't wait to get out of quarantine so I can make new friends," I say, imagining me without all my new friends. Every night in New York City, people go out on their balconies and clap for all the healthcare workers. Tonight we went outside and someone announced that the governor said we are starting to flatten the curve. This gave me hope.
Well, thank you for doing that, Anna.
Okay. Thank you.
It's our pleasure. Stay safe.
So today we get to speak with award-winning author of the book Worth the Wait about her latest novel, Camp Click, book one of the popularity pack. Eileen divides her time between writing middle school novels and teaching beginner novel writing and writing for children and young adults at the Writing Institute of Sarah Lawrence College. So please welcome author Eileen Moskowitz-Palma. Eileen, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me. I'm really looking forward to talking to you both.
So let's just jump right in. Would you be so kind to tell our listeners about yourself and your latest novel, Camp Click?
Sure. Okay, so I consider myself equal parts writer and teacher. So I even majored in both in college. I'm a former elementary school teacher. I now teach adults at Sarah Lawrence College's The Writing Institute. And so I divide my time between doing that and writing. So I have a new series that came out this year. It's called the Popularity Pact series. Book one, Camp Click, came out in April, and the sequel is coming out in October. So it's about two 12-year-old girls named Bea and Maisie, and they were best friends since preschool. And it was pretty much just the two of them all the way up until sixth grade, when Maisie stops hanging out with Bea and doesn't tell her why. And so Maisie goes on to spend sixth grade hanging out with the M&Ms, who are the popular group in school. And Bea really struggles to find a new friend group and to find new friends. And so she spends all of sixth grade alone with nobody to talk to, nobody to sit with at lunch. And she can't wait to go to sleepaway camp. So she goes to this adventure camp, Camp Amelia. She has best friends who she's been bunking with since the summer going into second grade, and she can't wait to go there. That's her place where she fits in, until Maisie ends up there with her. And Maisie not only ends up at her camp, she ends up in her bunk. But in a reversal of fortunes, Maisie, who fit in really well at school, does not fit in at adventure camp. Maisie's a really anxious kid who's unathletic, she's not adventurous, and she's somehow stuck with this bunk full of really sporty, adventurous girls, and she doesn't fit in. So Bea makes a pact with Maisie and says, I'll help you fit in at camp if you help me fit in when we go back to middle school in the fall. And so Camp Click is about what happens when Bea has to really help Maisie fit in at camp. And School Squad is about what happens when it's Maisie's turn to keep up her end of the bargain and help Bea fit in at school. And of course, the message of both books is that authentic friendship is more important than fitting in. But the girls each learn that lesson at a different time.
Nice. You've brought some very heavy topics into the book, such as drug addiction and divorce, in a fashion that's relatable for everyone. What inspired the story of Camp Click?
So I had, I guess, a couple of different inspirations, because like you said, it's a story that has multiple layers to it. So the portion about friendship and about what it's like for kids when they can fit into one world and they don't fit into another is something that I saw. You know, I have an 18-year-old daughter, so I only have one child. So it's sometimes I have to sort of crowdsource, because you only have that one child's experience. My child had the experience of being dropped by a friend group. And so I know the pain that can come from that piece of it. So the pain that Bea went through losing a friend is something that I walked through with my daughter. The issue of kids fitting into one place and not fitting into another is something I have seen with almost every single mom friend that I have. You get a kid who is the star of the travel basketball team. They're invited to sleepovers all the time. They have a ton of friends on that team, but they have nobody to sit with at lunch. Or the kid who fits in really well at school, but they do theater outside of school and they just can't fit in. And what I've seen time and time again is that instead of the confidence that you would think a child would feel from being the star on the basketball team and fitting in there, that is completely taken over by the hit that their confidence takes from not fitting in at school. And what really happens with these kids who fit into one place and not another is that the not fitting in is so scarring to them that it sort of supersedes the confidence you would think they have about doing well in another world. And so that was something I really wanted to write about, because I think it happens with kids all the time. And I've been working with a lot of kids and it through writing camps, which I guess we'll talk about at some point. And I've had so many kids say, this happened to me. I fit in great in this place and not in that place. And you really captured what that experience is like. So that's the piece about the friendship. The part about the drug addiction is something that was important to me. I had a family member who I was really close to, who, like Maisie's mother, got addicted to prescription medication. And when it happened to my family member, it was a good 20 years ago, before we really had an awareness that this is a problem that can happen. I think people didn't have this understanding that sometimes what starts a drug addiction is an underlying issue like anxiety, and a person's prescribed a certain kind of medication, and that can start them down that path. And here we are now, and there's a really big prescription drug addiction problem in our country. And I was thinking that chances are there are going to be readers who are experiencing this in their own family. And I really wanted to touch on that to bring them connection and to make them feel like they're not alone if they're experiencing this. And when I was doing these writing camps where I've been working with kids online virtually since the schools closed, I had a little girl who said to me, my brother went through what Maisie's mom did. He's 18 years old. He injured himself just like Maisie's mom did. He was prescribed painkillers and he became addicted. And she said, I felt all of those same feelings that Maisie felt. And I completely connected with her. I understood, and it made me feel like I'm not alone in this problem. And so when she told me that, I had chills because I thought, wow, this was my goal. This is what I was hoping, to make that connection, even if it's just that one person. So that was the piece that I really wanted to touch on. And in the second book, we see even more of that. So in Camp Click, we don't find out why Maisie's at camp until much later in the book. It's Maisie's secret that her mother had this problem. And the thing that Maisie struggles with in Camp Click is, how do I forgive her? How do I forgive someone who I understand is sick, but how do I forgive the choices that they made while they were caught up in this addiction? And it's something she struggles with in the first book. In the second book, the girls are home from camp, which means the parents are there and the siblings are there and all the drama at home is waiting for them. And so Maisie has to spend the whole second book coming to terms with, what does it mean when everyone else in my family has forgiven this person and I haven't? And so I really touch on it in the second book. Divorce, I haven't personally experienced. My parents have been married probably 45 years now. I lost track. I've been married for 21 years to my college sweetheart. So, but my husband's parents went through a divorce when my husband and I first started dating. And so I saw a lot of the pain that divorce can cause a family. And I really wanted to touch on what blended families can be like. And I also wanted to show that typically when a kid has a problem, like they're having a drama with their friend, right? Or they're having trouble in math class. That is never the only problem that they have. Most kids have more than one thing going on at the same time. So I thought it would be realistic that you have these two girls who are struggling with a friendship problem. But in addition, Maisie is struggling with the issue with her mother. And B also is a well-rounded person who has her own problems that she is dealing with. And so I thought B dealing with divorce and blended families would be a good way to layer in and show that it's not just one thing that kids deal with. It's usually more than one thing at the same time.
Yeah, I love the way that you had layered the story. I enjoyed the book so much. And one of the things that I really loved was the way you captured their voices, like of two young girls, like being a young girl in middle school. I remember all of that, the drama of the friendships and all of that. So you did a really great job in capturing that.
Oh, thank you. That means
you're welcome. When I finished reading Camp Click, it ended with the text message or the Instagram DM. And I thought, oh no, this is it. The book is over. So now I'm dying to know. And you know, without any spoilers, if you could tell us a little bit more about the M&Ms and sort of what's going to happen in that aspect of the book. So the, you know, mm-hmm. We found their other girl who's not part of the, whose name doesn't start with an M. So one of the things I guess I should explain is that this group that Maisie's friends with, they all of their names start with M, except now they're starting middle school. So they thought that maybe that's a little too babyish and that they need to expand their group.
Yes. And so Maisie, since B has helped Maisie fit in at camp, Maisie, they're about to get, you know, get off the bus at home. And now it's Maisie's turn to put B in the group. And Maisie's plan was to tell the M&Ms, oh, it's kind of babyish to only have girls with M names. Let's introduce someone with a different name. And while she's gone, they enacted that plan and brought someone else in the group. And her plan is spoiled. And I really wanted to end Camp Click on a cliffhanger like that, because our kids in this generation don't experience that quite as much as we did growing up. We would watch a show and the series would end in September. I mean, it would end in May and you would have to wait till September to find out what happened. And our kids, since they binge watch a lot of shows and watch like four seasons at once, don't experience what it's like to wait to find out. So I really wanted to leave Camp Click on that cliffhanger. I've been assuring all the kids that I'm working with in the writing camps, because they finish Camp Click and they say, I can't believe you ended it like that. And they truly are shocked because they don't experience that as much. I've told them all, I've reassured them that School Squad picks up right where Camp Click leaves off. We are still on the bus. I set it up in Camp Click that Maisie is always the one to come up with a new plan. Mm-hmm. And so once her initial plan is foiled, she has to figure out a different way to bring B into the group. I don't want to give away what that idea is, but she comes up with a new strategy. You find out pretty early that Maisie has a totally new plan and she's going to get B into the group. What you see take place over School Squad is that in the first book, Maisie has learned the lesson that true and authentic friendship is more important than fitting in. And she's also opened up about her secret to be about her mom's addiction. So when we come back, Maisie doesn't feel the need to hang out with the M&Ms anymore. The M&Ms were girls that she chose because they're surface level people who would never dig deep enough to find out her secret. And so when she comes back and she's friends with B again, she doesn't feel that connection to the M&Ms. B, on the other hand, has not learned the lesson yet that authentic friendship is more important than fitting in. So B spends the whole book pushing herself to fit into this mold. She gets a makeover. She has Maisie straighten her hair. She wears makeup. She dresses differently. She figures out that the M&Ms really need her because she's so smart. So she ends up not doing her own schoolwork, helping them with theirs. And so we really see in the second book, Bee struggling to learn this lesson that Maisie has already learned. And the M&Ms are sort of this mirror to show who has learned the lesson and who hasn't.
All right. Well, I'm looking forward to it. I can't wait till October 6th.
That makes me so happy. I'm not a cliffhanger kind of person in real life. In real life, if you ask me anything about me personally, I will just say it all. I will put it all out there. I don't keep secrets. I'm really open. So to write a cliffhanger goes against who I am as a person. And I was really nervous to do it, but I've had so many kids get excited about it. So I felt like it was the right choice.
Well, and this adult is excited about it too. So
that's awesome. That makes me really happy.
Now, I think I'd read somewhere that the series is only going to be two books. Are you thinking maybe of writing about the other girls in the Sunflower bunk? Because their stories sounded very interesting, but I know you didn't go as deep into their lives.
I love that you asked that. So originally the book, you know, it's a two book series. And then I started to think, you know, I wonder if I could make it almost like a Babysitter's Club series, mm-hmm. where there's a book about one of the Sunflower Bunk girls. I could expand on the girls in the M&Ms. But what happened to me first is this other story idea came to me sort of in a flash. And I'm being pulled to write that story first. And it's a standalone book called Sixth Grade Switch. Mm-hmm. And it's sort of like a Freaky Friday Back to the Future mashup. And so with a mother and daughter who switch places, it's obviously a mother and daughter who don't understand each other. And then the mother's best friend comes to visit. She gives them both magical bracelets. And at the same time, they say, I wish she understood me. And they wake up the next day and the mother is in the daughter's 12-year-old body in the current time. Mm-hmm. And the daughter has gone back to 1992, and she's in her mother's 12-year-old body. So it's sort of a Back to the Future, you know, Freaky Friday mashup. And so that's what I'm currently writing on, because I feel so drawn to it that I feel like I need to write that first and then figure out if I should expand the other series.
The time travel aspect to it is fairly unique. I can't think of anything that's done that the Freaky Friday has been done, but I don't think a time travel one.
Yeah, I wanted a twist on it. And that, you know, the mother is a helicopter mom who's really on top of her daughter and puts a lot of pressure on her. And I think there are a lot of moms in this generation who are like that. But most moms who are like that, there's a reason why. And I thought the only way her daughter could truly understand why she's like that would be to live in her shoes in that time. Because typically the switch is done where they live in the parents' grown-up body. And I really wanted her to go back and see how different life was back then. So that's what I'm working on now. I've also been doing these writing camps. So Camp Click came out at the height of COVID. So I live in New York, right outside Manhattan. My husband's an essential worker. He is a veterinarian at a really busy large animal hospital in Manhattan, which is also a teaching hospital. So he has interns and residents to train. So a month before Camp Click came out, things were pretty scary here in New York. I realized that I wasn't going to have any book events. All of a sudden, the schools shut down, the bookstores closed, the libraries were closed. I was most upset about not working with kids because, like I told you, I'm a former elementary school teacher. And I did one classroom visit 3 days before the schools closed. I visited a creative writing group in the Bronx and in elementary school. And it was wonderful to connect with these kids through writing. And I couldn't wait to do this. This is what I was most excited about. And then suddenly everything was canceled. And I was devastated, not about missing my book party, that I was devastated about not getting a chance to work with the kids. So my husband said to me, you know, I think you're missing something here. You're a teacher too. You have this, you're not just a writer, you're a teacher. Maybe you can help. And so at the same time, he said that my whole Facebook feed was flooded with parents who did not know what to do. Mostly houses with two working parents who were suddenly working from home and having to homeschool with no prep. My husband and I were brainstorming and we came up with this idea of this virtual creative writing camp. I thought this would be a 2-week thing. Over the course of a weekend, we came up with a flyer. I didn't charge for it. I just asked people to pre-order my book. 4 hours, four different meetings with the kids, helping them learn how to write short stories about friends having conflicts. So I posted it on social media at like 8 o'clock on a Monday morning, and I was teaching all day on Zoom, my grown-ups. When I got off of my Zoom, my inbox was flooded with parents who were like, we need this right now. This is great. Sign us up. So next thing I know, I had worked with so many kids. It's now, I guess, 6 months later, many months later, I've worked with over 300 kids. I've partnered up with the Providence Children's Museum, the Rhode Island Department of Education, and 6 different libraries. And we've brought this program to kids straight through March. I have to say, out of everything with this book experience, that has been the most rewarding part of it. I've been meeting kids all over the country and helping them write and helping keep them distracted from everything else going on around them. It's been pretty wonderful.
Oh, that's great. So will the program be continuing now as kids start back to school? So will you continue with it and work with schools too?
Yeah, so that's my hope. I basically took the writing camp and I realized that I could bring it to schools virtually. So I came up with this proposal of I could do lunch bunch. So I could do lunch club meetings with kids virtually. I could do after school writing clubs. I could do classroom visits and writing workshops. So I've been emailing schools to offer my services. So if any of the listeners hear this and you're a parent who wants to bring this to your school, or you're doing a homeschooling learning pod, I'm continuing this through the school year. I don't charge at all for the program. I just ask that people order the book because it's really hard to sell books during this time, as you can imagine. So, but my philosophy about this is that I just want to help families. I want to serve children. I want to keep them positive. I want to keep them writing. I want to give them things they can look forward to. So I don't want cost to be a barrier. So I'm not charging at all. I'm just asking for book orders. Just one book order gets you into the 4-week program. So my plan is to bring it to schools and see if they're interested so I can serve more kids, because this has been a really rough time for them. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That it has. So you also teach writing. We've touched on the camp a bit. What advice can you give in aspiring authors that want to expand their profession?
Okay, so I guess I have a couple of pieces of advice. One is I have a great book. I noted it down. Okay, so there's a wonderful book for anybody who thinks that they want to write a novel. It's called Save the Cat Writes a Novel by Jessica Brody. I have read countless craft books because I've been teaching novel writing, I think, for 7 years now. So I always tell my students, I buy the craft books and read them so they don't have to, and I pull out the best pieces and turn them into lessons. This book I have used so many times to teach my students how to outline a book, how to write a synopsis, how to figure out who your characters are. So I highly recommend that particular book out of all the craft books. That's top notch. It's Save the Cat Writes a Novel by Jessica Brody. That's one piece of advice. And another piece of advice is we're in this time where, because of COVID-19, there are more online writing programs than there usually are. For example, I am teaching 2-3-hour intensive year-long writing classes, and I typically just teach in person, but because of COVID, my classes are going to be offered to anybody online for the year. So look into programs like the Writing Institute at Sarah Lawrence College, where I teach, or other programs, because for the first time ever, teachers who typically only teach in person are offering classes online. So that's a second piece of advice right now. The third piece of advice is you need to schedule your writing time. It is just like anybody. I think it's very similar to people who have workout goals. So I used to run half marathons, and I had a very strict training schedule of, this is my long run day, this is my short run day, this is my cross training day. And I would put that in my schedule. I've always scheduled my writing time just like I schedule workout training time, because if you don't schedule it, everybody else's needs will come first. So you need to figure out what time of day you are most creative and most productive. Try to keep those hours open and don't schedule other things. I just want to say too, when I wrote my first book, Worth the Wait, I was working 2 part-time jobs, and my daughter was a competitive gymnast at Chelsea Piers in Manhattan, and I was bringing her into the city for these 4-hour practices. She trained like 20 hours a week. So my mom jobs were pretty busy too at that time, and I still made it happen. So don't make excuses. You can find the time if you say no to the things that aren't serving you well, and you hold yourself accountable to your writing time. So that's my biggest piece of advice.
Yes, that's one we hear often from authors. They say, just sit down and write.
Yes. You have to make it happen. You can't revise what's not on the page, right? So you have to set the time. One more thing that served me well is to have a writing partner, a writing friend. I have a really great friend. Her name is Lee Geller. She wrote a book called Trophy Life. She has another book coming out in the next year. She and I, pre-COVID, we met every Wednesday. We both work part-time, we're both moms. We both kept Wednesdays open. We would meet at a coffee shop and write. Then we would go next door and get lunch and keep writing. Then we would go back to the coffee shop and keep writing, and we would treat it like a work day. And then in between meetings, whenever one of us gets stuck, we send our manuscript to the other person and we meet up and we give each other advice. And it's like having a colleague at any other kind of job. And we miss each other. We've been FaceTiming, we've been talking on the phone, we haven't seen each other in person, but to have that person you can send your work to and they will give you honest and helpful feedback is crucial. So that's another piece of advice.
So how can people find you, especially about your workshops and everything? So online and social media, how do they get in contact with you?
Okay, so I have a website, EileenMoskowitzPalma.com. I don't know if I have to spell it, because if someone's listening to the episode, you'll see the spelling, right? Yes. I'm also on Instagram at EileenMoskowitz. And I'm on Instagram every day in my stories. I post there often. If you listen to this episode and you're interested in taking one of my workshops, they are going to fill up fast because there's limited spots. You can go on my website or you can just go on Instagram, Eileen Moskowitz, at Eileen Moskowitz Palma, and send me a DM and let me know. And I can you know, start an exchange and give you information about it.
Sounds good.
Here comes our favorite question. What are you reading right now, or what should we be reading?
Okay, so I have a list because I know you always ask this. Okay, so I always read fiction, and I always read books by thought leaders. I'm always on a journey of self-improvement, always. And so I always listen to both or read both. So Glennon Doyle's book, Untamed, which has been on the bestseller list, I think, for 22 weeks. My daughter and I were able to go to the only event that she had to launch this book. I think it was March 10th. We saw her at the 92nd Street Y in conversation with Abby Wambach. And then she had to cancel her tour, I think, 2 days later. My daughter's a member of the LGBT community, and it was really special for us to both sit in the audience and hear them in conversation. And I have to say, the book holds up to who Glennon Doyle is in an interview situation, but also who she is on social media. So highly recommend that book. Okay, a really good suspenseful thriller is The Guest List by Lucy Foley. I highly recommend the audio version because it's an ensemble cast of characters in the book, and they have different narrators for each person. Highly recommend it.
Fantastic. So that one looks very interesting. That's on my short list right now.
Yes, I loved it. My daughter's reading the hardcover. I listen to audiobooks because I work so much, and when I'm doing laundry is when I listen to a lot of my audiobooks. So that one I highly recommend. Okay, beautiful literary fiction, The Dutch House by Ann Patchett. That audiobook is also good because it's narrated by Tom Hanks. And oh my goodness. Yes, I highly recommend that. Becoming by Michelle Obama was such an amazing story that I had to stretch it out because I did not want to stop reading it. I had to just read it in little chunks because I didn't want to be done with it. Right?
I know that sensation often if I love it, like a television program, sometimes I just skip the last episode and that way I always have one more.
Yeah.
I should have done that with her book because I did not want to finish it. And then one other book is The Year of Yes by Shonda Rhimes. That's a really inspiring book for people like me who are a little anxious to try new things. That book really inspired me. So anyway, those are my top picks. I could go on and on, but those are the tops.
That's some great ones. They are.
They are. And I recommend if you is listening to the Becomings audiobook by Michelle Obama, because she's actually the one who narrates and won, I think, a Grammy for it too. So,
which is amazing. And I think there's a Netflix series based on it. I might have to check that out. I think I'll have to look at that into that.
Yeah, I would definitely be interested. I'll have to check that out too. The book's amazing.
So good.
All right. So is there anything else you'd like to add before I go ahead and do the outro?
No, just if you have a child between second grade through eighth grade who loves to write, Or if they're having a bit of a hard time right now in quarantine and you want to give them a chance to make new friends and to write and read together, go to my website or email me at eileenmpalma@gmail.com or follow me on Instagram. And I promise to get your child into one of my writing groups so that I can help them get through this hard time.
We should also have links in the show notes as well. So we'll hopefully make it easier.
Great. That would be wonderful.
So today we spoke with award-winning author Eileen Moskowitz-Palma. Her latest book, Camp Click, is available at Kirkwood Public Library and wherever good books are sold. Her next book, School Squad, will be available October 6th of this year. So I am so looking forward to that. I'm going to have to put myself on the list to get the book first.
Thank you. And thank you for carrying it on at your library. That's wonderful. That makes me really happy.
Thank you so much for joining us, Eileen.
Thank you both.
Well, Kirkwood, Jagisha, and I hope you enjoyed our trip to the Children's Library today. As we leave, I'd like to thank Eileen Moskowitz-Palma for joining us and future author and first place winner Anna of the I Survived COVID-19 Short Story Contest for sharing her story. Make certain you drop by Kirkwood Public Library's digital archive and enjoy all the fabulous entries in this contest. This week's quote is a favorite and comes to us from the children's book, The Phantom Tollbooth, by Norton Juster. You must never feel badly about making mistakes, as long as you take the trouble to learn from them, for you often learn more by being wrong for the right reasons than you do by being right for the wrong reasons. Thank you, Kirkwood. We shall see you next week.